Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. My guests this week are Gerry Boyle, the former director of Chagas, Geraldine Henshin, who is the PRO of the County Tipperary Drama Festival, Grainne Callanan, who is a student at the Ursuline Convent in Thurles. My first guest this morning is Liam Hennessy from Chagas, and this morning Liam and I are going to be talking about a liming programme. Good morning, Liam, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. How are things?
Sure, they're not too bad. We have to have a very bad week with rain, aren't we?
Oh, we are. It's very bad. We definitely want to stop soon, but we'll just keep our fingers crossed.
Right, and of course, Wednesday night did it all, not to talk about the early morning of last Thursday. So it's been a very difficult early spring for farmers.
Very, very difficult at the moment, Jim. I mean, we're trying to lamb sheep now at home, and it's tricky enough going. But fingers crossed, the sun will shine now next week, and we'll get going again, hopefully.
Your colleagues I had on last week were saying the whole thing, and they were hoping that the sun was going to shine this week, and we haven't seen much of it during the week. Anyway,
that's it. They're telling us every week the sun is going to shine, but we haven't seen it and yet.
Okay, let's look, Liam, at the liming programme. What is the first step in implementing a liming programme?
So look, the first step, I suppose, we'll go back to the basics, Jim. The first step would be to take a soil test. So ideally, you'd soil test the whole farm. So what you do there is, say, in November, December, January is an ideal time to do the soil test, because there's no residual nitrogen, say, from slurry fertilizer or anything like that in the ground that could skew the results. So you go ahead and take your soil test. So I suppose in order to take a soil test, what you do is you get a soil core, you walk your individual field. So you kind of pick an area, either a separate field or a paddock or a 5 hectare square, and you walk in a W shape and you take your soil samples across the field, and that should give you an accurate representation of the soil fertility status of your farm, and it can give you the benchmark to start with, say what way your P's and K's are looking and what way your lime is looking, your lime status on the farm is looking.
Right. And judging by what you first said then, that it's a little bit too late now to be applying lime for 2023. So if you do take soil samples now, you'll be looking at spreading lime maybe next November, December?
Well, not necessarily. Traditionally, farmers would have been spreading lime in November, December, January. But look, we all know the way the weather has gone, that seems to be kind of impossible. So what we'd be kind of recommending is apply your lime, say, in April, May, June, that kind of thing, on low covers. You'd be kind of aiming for maybe a day that there's a bit of rain June to wash it in, things like that. Maybe after first cut silage, that would be an ideal time to apply the lime.
Right, okay. So there's no really set time of when you can spread
it. Not really,
no. Yeah, okay, that's the important part of it. Then,
okay,
the main benefits then of lime?
Well, look, just an interesting statistic to start that point. Soils of a low pH, if you spread nitrogen on those soils, 65% of that nitrogen does not make it to the plant. So 65% of that just sits in the ground. It's there ready to be used, but the plant can't use it due to the low pH. So ultimately, that nitrogen gets leached away through the soil, and eventually it goes into our water courses, drains, rivers, that kind of thing, and then we end up with a water quality issue, which we don't want. So the basics, I suppose, is spread your lime. The lime will raise the pH. It will allow nutrients to be utilized to full value, say, and you can spread 100% of your fertilizer is going to get used versus a smaller amount of it.
Right, so that's the main benefit. We'd have to look on lime as being a fertilizer as well. And
absolutely.
It's a very cheap fertilizer when you consider the price of it as against the price of going out and buying a bag of 18, 6, 12 or 10, 10, 20.
Absolutely. And lime it's roughly about €25 a ton spread and delivered. Mm-hmm. And it's actually commonly known as the forgotten fertilizer. because people have kind of forgotten about lime usage has gone down since the 1980s in this country. Now, it's steadily increasing, but it's deemed the forgotten fertilizer because of, well, sure, it's been forgotten across a lot of farms.
Well, of course, one of the reasons that I suppose we haven't been spreading that much lime since the 1980s, and particularly here in Tipperary where there's quite a lot of tillage, you know, lime was a very important fertiliser for any of us that were growing sugar beet in the past. And sure, nobody grows sugar beet now, only the odd farmer grows it as a fodder crop. So, again, that's one of the reasons why land isn't getting lime.
Correct, yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And look, I suppose just another point on the main benefits of the lime as well. Clover, it's kind of the new buzzword, you could call it. Clover, it needs a high pH for to grow, basically, in grassland. So clover actually fixes nitrogen, and it can it has an ability to fix 150 kilos of nitrogen a hectare. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by fix is it takes in atmospheric nitrogen, converts it to a form then that the grass can use, and ultimately then you can further save in your fertilizer usage if you have spread your lime, get your clover right, and you can reduce your fertilizer usage then as a result.
Okay, moving on then. What is the role of lime on a derogation farm?
Well, look, Jim, derogation farm, when you're in derogation, it's mandatory to take soil samples. Mm-hmm. So they must, derogation farmers must have a set of soil samples, and when they go into derogation, if they, they have, in the first year of the soil samples been taken, if they take soil samples, say this year, 2024, and the lime requirement is 100 tonnes, they have to spread 25% of that 100 tonnes in the first year of the in the first year.
Yeah.
So lime is mandatory across derogation farms. And look, derogation farms, they run the risk of getting kicked out of derogation if they don't follow the 25% rule on the lime spreading.
So I take it then that the minimum they can spread in the first year is 25%. And I presume they can split the 100% then over the next 3 years.
Absolutely, Jim. Yeah. So you can, you have to spread the 25%, and then you can, the remaining 75%, you can split it then over the following couple of years then.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And we're looking at a kind of a 4 year plan.
Correct, 4 or 5 year plan, basically. Yeah.
4 or 5 year plan. And that soil sample that the farmer has taken, does that hold for that whole 4 or 5 year period?
Correct, yeah. So a soil sample will be valid for the 5 years.
Yes, that's
so
what I mean, yeah.
You can, you take another set of soil, fresh set of soil samples in 5 years' time, and say if your lime requirements, if you've taught up a whole farm lime requirement of, say, 50 tonnes, you have to spread 25% of that 50 tonnes in the first year.
Okay, give us an update then on the 2023 liming scheme.
Yeah, so look, this time last year, the government announced an incentive to for farmers to spread lime. So they offered a €16 a tonne subsidy up to 40 tonnes on lime purchases. So look, originally the deadline to have that lime spread for any farmer in that scheme was the 31st of March. But unfortunately, as we all know, the weather is after going bad on us with the constant rain. So the minister announced yesterday that the scheme deadline for spreading has been extended to the 28th of June. Friday the 28th of June is the new date to have the lime spread for those farmers in the liming scheme, the National Liming Scheme.
So that updates that for anybody, and it gives farmers a chance. Maybe some farmers will have their first cut of silage well and truly done at that stage, and gives them the opportunity to get it out on a fairly bare pasture.
Absolutely. It's quite a good thing.
If
you have a bare, clean slate after cutting silage, it's the absolutely ideal time to spread the lime. So it's after working out well for us.
Okay. Anything else you would like to say before I let you go, Liam?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered everything in our class.
Okay. Well, Lucas, I want to thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Liam Hennessy from Chagas talking about implementing a liming programme on your farm. Listeners, my next guest this morning is the PRO of the County Tipperary Drama Festival Committee. And as some of you may know, The festival kicked off last night when Holy Cross Ballycal Drama Group presented Dancing at Lunasa. So there are still 8 wonderful nights to be had in Holy Cross over the next 8 nights. And with me to talk about the festival and to talk about some of the plays that are in it, I have, as I said, the PRO. She is Geraldine Henshin. Good morning, Geraldine, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim.
Okay. Yes, Geraldine. Your week kicked off in Holy Cross last night.
We certainly did, yes, to a great night. Opening night is always so exciting. You know, we started with a cheese and wine reception for our sponsors. We're so grateful for, you know, without them, the festival would be only half of what it would be, you know. So it's an expensive week, but a very enjoyable one.
Okay. Now, last night you had a local Holy Cross drama group, but tonight is local as well. We have Moyne drama group with Stolen Child.
Yes. Moyne drama group doing Stolen Child, yes. And they're on the circuit this year. It's about, I think, they've been on the circuit before, but they've come back to it now. And I'm delighted to see, we're all delighted to see another Tipperary group competing. They're, you know, they're around the country, but they're coming to us tonight, and they're all looking forward to us. I'm getting messages from them saying how much they're looking forward to coming over the road to Holy Cross.
Okay, and of course we should put in a word of warning that this is a play that's not suitable for children.
Not suitable for children, no, it's not.
Okay,
no.
Whereas all the other plays are suitable for children.
Well, with the exception, I'm afraid again, Jim, of Sunday Night, is not suitable for children by any means.
Oh, you're right,
That's a Marina Carr play on Raftery's Hill. That was at the festival before. It's an excellent play, and it's played by Wayside Players. They're coming to us from Wexford. It's a very enjoyable play, but it's very intense. So certainly not suitable for children.
Right. And then as we go into the main days of next week, now all the rest of them are suitable for children. So on Monday you have the Ferryman with Ballet Duff down there County Waterford coming up to visit us in Holy Cross.
That's right, in West Waterford. And indeed Holy Cross themselves were over in Ballet Duff last week competing in their festival. So it's great to have Ballet Duff here. Now, when we say suitable for children, really, I just would like to point out that a lot of these plays would go over children's heads too, you know. Mm-hmm. So it would be, it's not a case of sitting in the front row eating a bag of crisps. you know, it is festival at the end of the day, you know, and the adjudicator is there, and it's intense for the cast as well as other people too, you know, but not saying they're not welcome, they certainly are, but it's just to point out that they're not pantomimes by any means, you know.
Okay, and then on Tuesday night, next you have Antigone presented by Brideview Drama Group from County Cork.
Yes. It's Antigone, it's a Greek tragedy as such, you know, and I'm looking forward to seeing that one, actually. We haven't had that one in Holy Cross before. It's a very large cast, as is the Ferryman, actually. There's, would you believe, 22 on stage at some stage during the play. So, a lot of people. But enjoyable, though. Great to see different faces.
Okay. The Same Old Moon on Wednesday night.
By Sleavorty in County Clare. They're coming to us. That's a Geraldine Aaron play, which is very enjoyable as well. A lot of these plays are, about families and, secrets and, you know, the secrets in play in families. They kind of erupt every now and again. So this one is a good one to enjoy.
Okay. And a real oldie then coming up on Thursday the 21st, Drama at Inish by Lennox Robinson.
Drama at Inish by Rear Cross. Yes.
And Rare Cross Tram
over
Group,
the road
yeah.
again. Yes, Rare Cross are coming over the road again. Another Tipperary group, and I'd love to see Rare Cross going a bit further into the festival circuit as well. It would be lovely to see them. It's great to have them come down and put up their play, you know, in a different, you know, outside of their own village and whatever. But it's lovely to see groups doing that, you know, because there's so, you know, it's such fun. You know, I know it's a lot of work and everything, and it's expensive, and you know, you have to have your crew and your cast and lighting and costume and that. But it's great to see groups, you know, getting a bite at the festival, just to see what it's like, you know, and they may carry on another, you know, next year and maybe venture out further mm-hmm. to do another festival, you know.
Okay, they came back last year for the first time in years anyway.
Yes.
And it's good that they got a flavour of what festivals are like, and they decided we're going to come back again in 2024,
exactly.
And it was great to see them.
Yeah, it's great to see them coming back.
Okay, the second last night then, we have The Lonesome West from Kilmeen Drama Group down there in Rossmore in County Cork.
Yes, that's Martin McDonagh. That's one of the trilogy. That is very enjoyable too. It's a small cast. There's only four in it. Well, two brothers and you know, the Girlene. They're all the different characters that are mentioned in the likes of The Beauty Queen of Lennan. That was one of the trilogy as well, mm-hmm. which Holy Cross did themselves back in 2019 and won the All-Ireland with it. So it's a very enjoyable play, The Lonesome West. So that's on the Friday night.
Friday night and Saturday night, the final night.
The final night then, we have Harvest Moon. They're coming all the way from County Mayo. So long distance to travel. And that is a play called Now and Then. I haven't seen that before, so I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I haven't even heard of it before. So
yeah, it's originally set in an Irish bar in Chicago in mm-hmm. 1981. And a young handsome Jamie is closing up one night when an older man comes in for a quick one. What happens that night may or may not change the course of Jamie's life. This is a story about love, following your dreams or not, and the cost of the decisions we make. Harvest Moon's presentation is an Irish adaptation of the play by John Corliss. So we're looking forward to seeing that, and that will finish off the festival, and then that will the awards then will happen shortly after that. And please God, mm-hmm. everybody will do well, and you know, we're really looking forward to this. Really looking forward to it.
We are, of course, and as you know, I've been out on the circuit for the last number of nights, and fortunately, every single place Holy Cross Ballycahill players have played in or presented their play, they've presented it to full houses. So let's hope we have full houses in Holy Cross for all the people who are coming.
Oh, 100%. It's just lovely to stand on the stage and look out at a full house. It's just amazing. It gives everybody that bit of oomph on the stage. And, excuse me, I mean, people come from all over. Like, there's, you know, we look down and we see people from Tipperary Town. They've been coming for years. And some people come as far from Carrick and Shore and from Kerr, from Cashel. Clonmel, some from Rossgray, Templemore. They're coming from all over. In fact, we had some people last night from Leash. So, you know, it's great to see them. And we have the tea room at half time where everyone can sit and enjoy a chat about the play. And, you know, they mightn't have seen each other for the since the previous year, but they'll catch up.
Okay.
To a phone and a cup of tea. And of course, the raffle.
Don't forget the raffle. Okay, very important to think about the raffle.
Yes.
Okay, admission is just a mere €15. Great value for money.
€15 for the night, €12 for concessions. But there's, you know, the season tickets, I know, like, if you weren't there last night, you would have missed the first night. But the season ticket is only €70, and that gets you into the full week. And it's great value. excuse me. A great value if you had your mother's birthday. It's Mother's Day now, was last week. They could have bought season tickets for their mummy.
Yeah.
For Mother's Day.
of course they could.
So it's great value.
And anyway, it starts every night. Curtain is up at 8:30.
At 8:30. And on the final night, the 23rd, which is Saturday night, it will start at 8 o'clock sharp. Because the awards night then happen, or the awards happen straight after the play and the adjudication and the raffle. So it's very important that we start early on the Saturday night. And, you know, we don't take bookings because the hall is very big. But if you come early, you will be guaranteed your seat. So, I mean, every night it's 8:30. If you come in at around 8:10, you will get the seat that you want. So, and this year we're actually taking credit card payment as well. So you don't have to have the cash. The cash can be for the raffle.
Okay. Well, look at Geraldine, we're out of time, but I want to thank you ever so much for joining us this morning on AgReport on Tip FM and sharing all the things that are going to happen in Holy Cross for the next 8 nights.
Thank you very much, Jim.
That listeners.
I'll see you there.
Okay, thanks, Geraldine. That, listeners, was Geraldine Henshin, who is the PRO of the County Tipperary Drama Festival. Listeners, during the week I had a visitor to my house. He often visited before as well. Former director of Chagas, Jerry Boyle. And he's just back from Africa, or Eritrea, I believe. And he's going to tell me a little bit about it. Jerry, thanks very much for dropping in.
Thanks, Jim. Always a pleasure to have a chat with you. Yes, I'm just back from a trip to Eritrea and Ethiopia. As you know, up to the early 90s, Eritrea was part of Ethiopia, and then they broke away and they're now an independent state. So I was out there with an Irish NGO. In fact, the only NGO that's allowed in Eritrea today is an Irish NGO called Vita. And we were looking at a project that I had first seen way back in 2016. And it was a dairy project.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I'm a passionate believer in the importance of dairying here in Ireland in terms of enabling relatively small-sized farms with limited resources to create a good standard of living, educate families and so on. And they have the same ambition in Eritrea. And when I went there in 2016, the government at the time had come up with a very simple scheme. They had allocated to each family, or what they call family farm household, they gave them all a cow, they gave them a few hens and a few beehives. And the only requirement was that the first heifer calf had to be given to another family. Now, the only problem at the time, and this is where Chagas got involved, they really didn't have a good advisory service. So they weren't able to really manage the nutrition requirements of the cow very well. So we came in a small way and started helping them. And when I went out there a couple of weeks ago, one of the farmers who got the first cow, he now has 8 cows, which was fantastic. We went to a couple of more farms where they had grown their cow numbers. And there was a nice Tipperary angle to this, Jim.
Yeah.
We got fantastic support from Dovey Genetics, from Ger Ryan.
Ger Ryan.
And Ger sent out semen straws. And I remember going to one farmer, and very enterprising man, and he was terribly excited. He showed me this calf, he says, our first Irish calf, he said. And I said, that's fantastic. And he said, oh, from Dovey Genetics, we got the straw out and so on. And he says, and you know what we called him? Dublin. I was disgusted. I says to him, why did you call him Dublin? It should have been Tipperary. But then I see the same calf again last 2 weeks ago. And she now had, I think since we were there last, she had 7 healthy calves, thriving. So it convinced me, and the government there are convinced, it's a poor country, you know, that they can advance in the way Ireland has done. Now, the average herd size at home is probably 3 cows. But they're growing all the time. They don't have a cooperative system because the politics doesn't seem to allow it.
Mm-hmm.
But I visited some small processing units, very small, where they're and the biggest problem is like we had here, is gathering the milk. The roads are very bad. Transport is atrocious. So it's really a one-man band delivering the milk as best they can on the backs of bicycles. I haven't seen donkeys and carts yet.
Okay.
You know, but I'm convinced with dairying, like we did, they'd be able to advance. And really, that was a very positive message I took back.
So what you're really saying, that they are where we were maybe 60, 70 years ago.
Maybe
before that. And their ambition, I like this one, their ambition is to grow that industry. And of course, they're probably looking at what has happened here.
No, they're looking, I mean, it's funny, we don't appreciate in this country, but I mean, I've had the good fortune with Travis to travel in an awful lot of countries. They are amazed at how we have developed in Ireland, particularly in the dairy sector. And the development, we're some of the biggest co-ops in the world now. You know, the likes of Tierlawn and Kerry. Everyone knows them, no matter where you go. And so they're looking to us for inspiration, and they're very interested in trying to understand what were. I gave a talk out there called Milestones in the Development of Irish Dairy. And they were very interested in a couple of aspects. One was, of course, the co-op movement itself, which, again, I don't fully appreciate the importance of it. It was an Irishman that created the whole cooperative concept, Horace Plunkett. In fact, Theodore Roosevelt in the United States around the same time was corresponding with Plunkett. So interested. So that's one thing. But I went through all the other developments. Of course, I couldn't ignore the importance of the Department of Agriculture set up in 1891. The advisory service was set up at that time, believe it or not. The education service. And the developments over time. And in particular, one I identified, which I think has been very important, is the ICBF and the importance of genetics. And that's probably the single biggest need in these countries. They have poor quality cows. They need to cross them with the best internationally. And that's a very difficult message to get across, because they want to abandon the local breeds, which is a mistake. Mm-hmm. Because the local breeds, they have their deficiencies, but they're weathered to the environment and climate of the regions. If you can cross them with the best internationally, you've probably got the best path forward. And that's a hard message to communicate. And I've been in many countries. Now, I remember being in Vietnam a few years ago. They had imported all their dairy genetics from Denmark and the Netherlands. And it was appalling to see these animals did not survive in a harsher environment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the officials in these countries are often completely gobsmacked by the yields they can see in Denmark and the Netherlands. They forget, you know, that a bigger animal needs more nurturing, more care, you know, need top class nutrition. And whereas if they were a little bit more modest in their ambitions for productivity in the long run, to work out better, you know.
We were having a little chat before we started, and you mentioned a project, something new to me, and that is people selling carbon in Africa. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm a director of a company called Finance Carbon Impact Limited, which is a subsidiary company developed by that NGO I mentioned, Vita. And the idea is very, very simple, but an intriguing one. We've got investors from all over the world, a lot from the United States, to invest in the purchase of fuel-efficient stoves for households throughout Africa, mainly East Africa. And we're starting with Eritrea and Ethiopia. And these fuel-efficient stoves use an awful lot less timber to fuel the stove for a start, which means less work, mainly for women. In fact, it's reduced the workload by about two-thirds. You'd see women all over Ethiopia. The two things you notice, they have these heavy piles of woods in their backs and also heavy piles of fodder. And they're walking throughout the day, this is going on. So it's reduced the fuel required, which is saved carbon. And we're then able to trade that carbon on what's called the international carbon market. And the money's generated then go back in to the developed countries. So it's a kind of a perfect circle, really. So it's one of these novel sort of opportunities that emerge from the whole debate about greenhouse gases and everything else, you know. So I'm very excited about that.
Absolutely fantastic. Anyway, this is a very important week for you. We're going to wear your other hat, which is very important, a hat that both of us share together.
That's right.
And that is drama. And I know currently you're on the circus. I believe you're going to be in Holy Cross next week. But this weekend, you're on at home in Rare Cross.
Yes, thanks, Jim. Thanks for giving me that opportunity. We're doing a very old play by Lennox Robinson on this Friday night, Saturday and Sunday in Rare Cross. There's a very large cast. There's actually 13 in the cast. And we've added an additional cast member. So there's 14 altogether. And as you know, like yourself, I'm a great follower of amateur drama for a long, long time. And then we're delighted we're in the festival in Holy Cross, as you said, next Thursday night.
Thursday of the coming week,
you're 21st,
in Holy Cross, which is very important. And it's you coming back to Holy Cross after, you know, last year you came back after years of not being in the Tipperary Drama Festival.
Well, I was, I'd been involved in drama in Dublin for a long, long time, so I was well used to the festival circuit. But some of our new members now, you know, had never been on the festival. Some of the older ones had. So I said, look, it's an opportunity to... You can learn an awful lot from festivals because you get an objective view of performance, and that's no harm from time to time. You know, we all think we're great when we're on the stage, but it's useful to get someone from outside looking in. There was no axe to grind. There's no favourites on stage, and gives it to you, usually, very honestly. So I think that's a big benefit.
Okay, and you're doing something very nice for your late father. You know, I acted with your late father.
That's right, yeah.
A great actor and a great producer as well when he went on to the production side of it. But you're honouring him in Holy Cross by giving a trophy.
That's right, Jim. And of course, I had the pleasure of acting with yourself many, many years ago.
Oh, God, be with you, Jerry.
No, look, my those who know my father, Joe Boyle, he absolutely adored acting. He was involved in several groups at Holy Cross, obviously, also with Thurles for years and years. And he took it, and the Inch Players, of course, famous Inch Players, he took it very, very seriously, you know. And he played some tremendous parts. So we've been thinking for a long time, and I discussed it with the festival committee, and Donald Duggan was fantastically enthusiastic about setting up a prize to honour his memory. And it's amazing, he's dead a good while now, but people still remember some of the performances, you know. And that's great, that's heartening to know. So we're delighted that the committee accepted our suggestion. Yeah. Trophy.
Okay, and it's fabulous, and we look forward to seeing you in Holy Cross on next Thursday night, and we're quite sure that we'll see you again on the final night when you'll be there to present the award that you're in memory of your father.
Thanks, Jim, and I want to wish the Holy Cross group who are on the circuit at the moment the very best as well.
Thanks, that's very good.
Dancing at Lunasa.
Thank you, and that's very gracious of you. Jerry, thanks for calling
in.
Jim. Listeners, I paid a visit to the Ursuline Convent. You may be wondering why I would go to the Ursuline Convent, but to be honest with you, four girls from the Ursuline Convent were in the Aberdeen Angus competition where you get, how many calves? Three?
Five
calves. Five, four girls looking after five calves. And that competition has just concluded in Croke Park a couple of weeks ago. And with me, I have Grainne Callanan, and Grainne is going to tell me a little bit about their project, how they got on with the calves, and the prizes will be awarded at the ploughing in 2024, which will be going to be next September.
Yes.
Grainne, you're more than welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we did our project on health and safety on beef farms, and we decided we would educate primary school students on farm safety. So we developed an interactive video that connected students through their tablets to a presentation that was playing, and really to highlight big dangers on the farm.
Okay, big dangers on the farm. So in your research on big dangers on the farm, on a beef farm in particular, what was the number one danger?
I think the number one danger is It's hard to say because it changes for every age group. So for the younger kids, it's a lot of livestock, but there's a lot of things that you wouldn't really think about. Mm-hmm. So we found for younger kids, a really big danger that was kind of overlooked was gates falling on kids and things like that, which is something you don't really think about. So that was something we really wanted to highlight in our video. So we had like a gate hanging against, just loosely hanging on the side of a wall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's to show the kids that, you know, you can't climb up on this because it's like it can fall over so easily back on top of them. And then for some of the older kids, like when they got into sixth class and things, the big thing for them was machinery, because, you know, you can get your tractor license when you're 16. So a lot of those kids weren't far off driving tractors themselves. So we thought it's really important for them to know just the basics about safety around the tractor. Like we found that there was a real lack of knowledge, especially with things like such basic things like wearing a seatbelt on a tractor. Like a lot of the feedback we got was a lot of people didn't actually know you had to wear your seatbelt on a tractor. And, you know, this kind of basics that just aren't really being conveyed to the children themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And was it only children you looked at?
We focused primarily on children. We did a small bit on farmers' mental health and kind of looked at the challenges to farmers. So we visited the local mart and we were talking to farmers at the ploughing. And we found, and kind of just seeing where the real shortcomings were as regards like farmers' mental health. And we kind of found that the big thing was overworking. So a lot of them actually thought that there was facilities, like compared to now as it was, the facilities have gotten so much better. Where there's still really a weak point is overworking, and it's kind of giving farmers time off, because a lot of these farmers are saying like they don't have holidays and things, because you can't just up and leave the farm. And that was a big thing for them. And the other one was that when you're working so often, they weren't really getting out with their friends. So a lot of them were, the only contact they had with people was kind of that maybe once a week or going to the mart and things like that. So that's what we kind of spoke to older generations about.
Did you get to meet Alma Jordan and Agri Kids?
We didn't meet Agri Kids, but we were speaking with Agri Aware. Yeah. Marcus O'Halloran runs this. And we just brought our project that we had developed to Marcus O'Halloran because Amy Gray was with them, because we thought it was really important that, like, these are people who are masters in this, like, they know everything about it. So we said we'd go to them with ours and see what they thought about it. And the feedback we got was really, really positive. And we just thought it's really important, especially when it's such an important issue, that you know that all your facts are right and everything you're doing is right, because, like, it would have been very dangerous if we were bringing the wrong information to these kids. So that
okay, let me get back to the five calves.
Yeah.
How did they perform?
They performed really well. They were on our farm. Mm-hmm. And a big thing with the competition is kind of spreading awareness about the breed. And so a big advantage of the Irish Angus breed is that they... like, you can leave them out on grass for longer. So our calves were out on grass for the majority of the time they were there. And when they're in, they have a lower finishing age, which means that they're more environmentally friendly. And another big thing with them was they're quite low maintenance. And obviously now they're not safe. There's no livestock safe, but they have they're more docile than a lot of the other breeds. And we did find that was a big thing when we were talking to some of the farmers, is that, you know, when you're getting a bit older and a bit slower, working with the big cattle that are really, really aggressive, it can get harder. Like, mm-hmm. We thought it was really good that we did have these Angus, so we can talk to these about like alternatives and things that could make their job easier, because it's all about making their job easier, because that's going to reduce their workload as well, inevitably. Like,
are the cattle gone from you now?
Yeah, so the cattle, we brought them to ABP on Care in Care. And we got a tour of the factory at the same time, which we found really, really enlightening. We really enjoyed the whole day, and we ended up keeping the profits of the calves as well. So that was another benefit to the competition. I thought it was really, I think we were all kind of shocked by the factory visit, mm-hmm. because we kind of went into it with not very high expectations, like, you know, when you think about it. But I think it really raised our respect for the actual factories and the whole meat processing kind of area, because it was just how humane and how much respect was given to every part of the process, mm-hmm. and how every single part of the animal was used. Like, and it wasn't. I think there's a misconception that it's quite wasteful, and I think the visit to the factory really showed us that this couldn't be further from the truth.
And I do know. Interviewing some
students like yourself a few years ago that had been involved in the same project, that they were quite shocked by the factory experience. You weren't shocked by the factory experience?
I think we were shocked in a good way.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you're looking at something that is a little bit, it is a little bit like bloody and gory kind of when you think about it. But when we were actually there, it's actually not at all like that. Like, I actually thought, yeah, I thought the most interesting part for us was the fact that absolutely every part of the animal is used. Mm-hmm. Like, you see a lot of articles in the media and things about the waste and all of this. But when you actually went into how every single part of this animal was used, maybe it's not all used in Ireland, but it's used somewhere around the planet. And I think that was the best thing for us. And it was just the whole experience. It was so clean and it was so well kept. And even all of the workers and everything, there was just a they were all really content doing their jobs. And you could really sense that it wasn't the place that a lot of people think it is.
Okay, the school did reasonably well, we'll say, but fortunately, one member of the school did exceptionally well. It was your good self. So you got an award as the best communicator.
Tell me
about this.
So I got the award for the best communicator. And the judge's reasoning was we went to Brussels last year and we got an opportunity to speak in front of the European Parliament, in front of the Irish MEPs. And they were impressed by my speech there. And so we were talking to the MEPs about there's a lack of kind of baseline across all the European countries for the data as regards farm accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of different methodologies from country to country. And our big thing over in the European Parliament, we thought it was a really good opportunity just to kind of ask them to see what their views were on this whole lack of kind of a basis. And I think all of the MEPs were kind of shocked by it as well, because I don't think it's really well known. I don't think it's really made obvious to them. So like in countries like France, as an example, they only report farm worker accidents, which means that no kids are being reported. So if an accident happens with a child, it's obviously now they know the accident happens, but it's not being traced back to the farm and being a farm accident. So if you look across the figures of like farm accidents across Europe, some countries are much higher than other countries. And like a country like France is still a very, very agricultural country. But the accidents are really low because it's only people who are on a payslip, let's say, from a farm who are being reported as a farm accident. And our big thing was to the MEPs, we were trying to set across that, like, how can these issues be addressed? Like, and how can the shortcomings as regards safety be addressed if you don't know what's causing the accidents? So that was our big thing.
How was it like for the four of you to spend, how many days did you spend in Brussels?
We were 5 days in Brussels, I think, overall. The whole trip was 5 days. We were in Brussels for a little bit less than that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was an absolutely amazing opportunity from the whole thing. So we started off actually in Ireland for the trip, and we went up and we went to Lismullen Cookery School, and we went to Teagasc in Dublin and Borbia. And so I think that really gave us a good basis for the trip, and we kind of learned a bit about the Irish agricultural sector here. We were out in Grange because it was on the way back from the cookery school, and we got a tour of their farm there. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting to us, because then when we went out to Brussels, we got to go to Belfern Angus, which is an Angus farm in Belgium.
Right.
And so it was really nice for us to see the difference between how they do it over there compared to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And we also went to a butchery school, which was really interesting to us because it's not really a concept we have in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So they have kids, secondary school age kids, who instead of going to secondary school, they're going to this school and they're doing their core subjects like their maths and their English and those subjects. But on top of that, they're learning how to be butchers at the same time. So we found that really interesting. And then, of course, we got to go to the European Parliament, which was, it was amazing, I think, to get to speak to them. And, you know, I think the whole tour and all, it was really enlightening to see how it works and things like that. And I think it was really an opportunity that very few 18-year-olds can say that they've spoken to the MEPs in the European Parliament. So it was really nice, yeah.
You're in sixth year, final year in secondary school. You told me before we started the interview that you were thinking of studying pharmacy.
Yeah, I am. But I think after the competition, I think beforehand, to be honest, I didn't really have an awful interest in the ag food, kind of that whole sector.
Yeah.
But I think after the competition, I think when you see the way the whole sector is, and like, I think it's throughout the whole competition, there were so many people who were so willing to help us and speak to us and things like that. And you see that the sector is really welcoming, and it is at a really good place at the minute. I think a few years ago, it was very male dominated, and it wasn't really something that crossed any women's minds, like that they were going to go into this sector. Whereas now, I think it's getting a lot more even, and there's a lot more women coming up to higher roles inside in all of these places. And yeah, so I think I am kind of more thinking towards that sector a lot more than I was. And it mightn't be the agricultural part of it, but I think a really good part of the competition was that it wasn't just like the farmers and the people who are working directly into the agricultural. There was the business, there was the marketing, and then there was the science kind of side of it as well. So that was really interesting as well.
So you might change your mind and you could go into the food business eventually.
I might.
Okay, look, I want to thank you ever so much for taking some time out of what is a bit of a school day to have a chat with us.
Thank you.
That listeners was Grainne Callanan from the Ursuline Convent in Thurles.
A big thank you to all my guests who joined me this morning. That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll join me at the same time next week. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Eamon de Wire presents Down Your Way.